right, you're back in the DFSR. It's an NBA podcast for Tuesday, February 11th. I'm Doug Norrie, and over there is
James Davis.
And we are coming at you with a five-game NBA slate for FanDuel and DraftKings. Some interesting stuff to talk about on the injury front. Some teams sort of going weird directions. I don't know if, like, it's a little weird about the NBA this year because I do feel, in some ways, that outside of, like, one spot, the playoffs are kind of just set. Like, do you get that feeling? I hate that because I feel like it maybe drives down interest. But, like, the East is basically all but set from a playoff perspective. And it's weird, but, like, the West is kind of getting there, too, with really only one spot in doubt. Like, do you think that, like, harms the product to – or that most fans are just waiting for the playoffs anyway? Like, I'm not sure how – because I'm not just I'm not a standard NBA fan, so I sometimes get a little. I wonder a little bit about why, how, like my interest will never wane because we have DFS and we have, you know, I do a Nets podcast, so like I'm fine. But I also wonder a little bit about your average fan, if that kind of certainty. I mean, we haven't even hit the All-Star break yet, right? That's not until next week, and it's kind of just shuffling around for seeding. Or who's going to get a good pick in what's supposed to be a bad draft, right? Like I don't really know. Right. It feels a little bit like the intrigue for the NBA season isn't going to even come for like three more months, and I just don't know how that. I just wonder about that from a product standpoint.
Yeah, I think there is. There's got to be some amount of issue there, right? Because even like in-season storylines, I feel like are relatively lacking this year. So we had the big burst of, hey, it's the beginning of the season. All these guys switch teams. Like, let's see how it all comes together. And it did, but there's also this piece of like, I think resting the stars honestly hurts quite a bit too, because you can't even count on, like if you're a casual fan, again, if you're not sitting there refreshing who's starting, who's playing, you're not on Basketball Monster checking the reports first thing in the morning the way we are, then you might not even know like, oh man, I just made this like Bucks Pelicans game appointment television and Giannis and Zion, neither one of them are playing. Right. Like, cool. Like that was a good use of my time. And you only have to get burned a couple times like that. You know, the Clippers are the same way. They're like, ooh, it's a new big two. It's like, oh yeah, but neither of them is playing. It's like, you know, Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell. Right. And I think that definitely decreases interest. I mean, from my level of basketball fan, I'm actually very intrigued by this season. I think the storylines are pretty incredible. Like, you know, Milwaukee's historic run. I think the Raptors, you know, 15 straight right now. And just without Kawhi, like the fact that they kind of pieced together.
By the way, without Kawhi and basically Kawhi without them, I mean, one of their best players per night. Like they've gone through this carousel of injuries where like literally every single guy, every other relevant guy in that lineup has been hurt at least once this year for multiple games, right? Like they've
sure, and they have they even had Gasol for any of it?
Yeah, they've had maybe the first couple games. I don't think I got to look at how many minutes those actual five have played together. It's got to be very minimal, but yeah, overall, right? No, I'm not talking about myself when it comes to these storylines. I'm engaged every single night. I love it, like, and so I just more wonder about like sort of the casual person, like if it rates as a good product. Or if it's just like, well, nothing is really going to happen here. If Philly and Miami play, one wins, one loses, and they jockey around the fourth and fifth seed, it's like, they're not going anywhere, right? Like even like Indiana, who's lost six in a row since Oladipo's come back.
Right, they'd have to lose another 10
they're
just in a
not,
row.
They're going to make the playoffs. These teams are so bad. Detroit might not win another game. Like, there's like some of these teams are so bad. So anyway, I don't know. I didn't really have any great thought about it except to say, it makes for an interesting product, and it'll make the playoffs. I think the playoffs are going to be great because the playoffs is a true we don't know what's going to happen scenario. But that's still many months down the line. Like I said, we have not even hit the All-Star break yet. Let's roll through.
I think there's stuff. There's stuff too in the West. Just to put a bow on it, I think the battle over that eighth seed actually is pretty interesting. You have some real teams, some cool storylines. Memphis, you know, like will they squeak in as an AT, which I think would be significant for them and their young core? Will like last year's Western Conference Finals team in Portland not make it? San Antonio would be the first time they missed the playoffs. New Orleans, now they're kind of surging now that they have everyone together. So I think there's stuff going on. But yeah, if you're not like a league pass, you know, diehard, then I get why you wouldn't just tune in on a random Thursday night for the primetime games, because it just kind of feels, these games seem to happen in isolation from one another, right? It's like, for a casual fan, I imagine it doesn't feel that coherent.
Yeah, I think that kind of sums up, I think. It's just that, yeah, right. Are you just tuning in as appointment television? I'm just not totally sure. And some of the teams you just mentioned in the West are playing tonight, so we'll talk about them a little bit as we go along. The first game is the Clippers and the Sixers. This game started as Sixers as slight favorites. It started as Clippers minus one favorites, and now it's up to minus 1.5 on the road. They are going to be fully healthy with Kawhi coming back after sitting the back-to-back. PG's playing. I take it back. They are without Patrick Beverley here. But on an...
And Paul George still on a minutes limit, too.
Okay, and so I guess my question is, when we get a situation like that, Philly's still very good at defense, very good on defense, very long, they're getting healthier. I'm kind of on the mind where it's like, if everyone's around, and I don't count Patrick Beverley as a part of that group, I guess I count Kawhi and PG really as the group, and to a lesser extent, Lou Will and Montrezl, and they've added Marcus Morris. This to me feels, the Clippers feel when everyone's around that I just am not all that interested in what they're going to put out fantasy-wise, and that can be wrong sometimes because Kawhi has some peak games in him, but what are your thoughts here on LA, and then we can talk a little bit about the Sixers.
Yeah, so the path to DFS relevance for this game, which I think is potentially a little bit more than you implied, was that this game should be close, and I think that's mattered for both of these teams. You know, well, the Clippers in particular that are just a very, very good team, and they're very deep, and they just don't need to play their good players very many minutes in many of these games because their second unit is so good and so on. In a game that should be pretty close, I think that someone like Kawhi could be playable because I think they'll need his defense and his length coming back the other way. And if this game is really a 1.5, 2-point game, then I think you could see him hit the upper end of his minutes because Clippers are very quick to pull him after 27 to 30 minutes. But you do see 36, 37-minute games as you scroll down over the last month or so of game logs. So if you think he's a true talent $10,000 guy, maybe you squeeze him in. But I think ultimately maybe that's even just a big tournament kind of concept, right? It's like stack both sides of this game and hope for overtime or something, because I think you're probably right that there's just plenty of other options in these other games.
Not good defenses on them and are very fast paced, and I think that's probably where we end up landing. The Sixers have Josh Richardson back. He's still on a minutes limit. I'm only saying that because when he's not around, they did kind of run some of the
Stead sounds good to me.
They ran some of these like Shake Milton, Furkan Korkmaz minutes, but those are kind of going by the wayside. And Bede's price has just really dropped. Like, he's had some struggles since coming back from the hand injury, and I'm just not sure this is the spot that we really want to play them. Real quick, crazy stat about Philly, and this is not news for Philly fans. They have the very best home record this year, 24-2 at home, and they are 7-19 on the road. Like, it's just crazy, crazy home splits for the home. That feels probably very noisy, and it's so crazy different how much better they are at home than they are on the road. Like, do you make anything of stats like that, or do you think that, like, that's just such a massive difference for a team that's pretty good? I'd never know what to make of it.
Yeah, I would want to look at, like, how many of those games did Embiid sit on the road, or you know what I mean? Like, I think there are some other factors that could play into that aside from just random statistical noise. But yeah, I'd say it's wide enough that you can probably infer something from it, right? I mean, being 24-2 at home and then just being absolutely dog poop awful, to save our sponsors there for a second, is telling them something. And it's kind of funny too, because as they shape up for the playoffs, the fact that they have such a good home court advantage this season, but have been so terrible on the road, means they probably won't play him that many home games, which is...
That fourth and fifth seed swap for them in Miami probably does make a difference. Like, they might be very motivated to make sure at least that first set of games is at home rather than on the road.
Well, Miami 22-3 at home this season too, so they're another team that's actually played out pretty similar.
The other 7 o'clock game is Chicago and the Wizards. This game has a 230 over under that opened at 230. Now it's down to 229. You know, the Wizards, we've seen it. The Wizards have given up just a buttload of points this season. They gave up 151 the other night to the Bucks, who were playing without Giannis. This is not every night to this team, but they have just let up a massive amount of points. I wrote up Zach LaVine on this slate because I just think, you know, Chicago, for some of its injury issues, I do think that he has, if in games stay close, he has like that 38 to 39 minute upside that we just don't see from a ton of players, although there are a few more on this slate than others. Thoughts on Chicago guys? They are priced up a little bit. I think DFS sites have started to come around a little bit on when you have the Washington matchup, because it's so choice that I think that you just have to kind of get these guys priced bump up a little bit. So LaVine right now not showing up in our lineups, and I could see a situation where he's a very popular play here because it's just not lost on people just how bad Washington is, or just how many points they let up on a night-to-night basis to opposing really everybody's.
Yeah, so I would say I can see a lot of Chicago guys being viable tonight. Chandler Hutchinson's another guy, even Thaddeus Young, Satoransky. Chicago's one of these teams that also has a difficult time playing in close games just because they're so damn terrible. But when they're up against another terrible team in Washington, you could see the peak minutes come out of these guys. These guys right now battling for that ninth seed in the East too,
yeah.
Separated by just one game in the ninth spot. But I do think that they will try their best. And if they do, I think the Chicago guys and the Washington guys going the other way will play the upper end of their minutes, which is sort of unusual for them. So I do think these Chicago guys, they're priced up, but I think it's probably appropriate.
Yeah, I like LaVine. Like I said, he's a little expensive on FanDuel at 9,000. I like the 8,000-ish price tag that you get on DraftKings. A little bit better there, 8,200. I think he'll probably be a pretty popular DraftKings play at that price, just because I think it'd be really hard to see yourself getting absolutely murdered for him. He's also shot really poorly from three over the last four games, which has dropped the price a little bit. Like, he's made like two of his last 18 or something like that. Just from beyond the arc, that's just outside of last game. The four previous games is when he had shot really poorly. And I'm with you on the guys like Young, and I wrote up Hutchinson as well. It's just sort of that middle tier cheap guy, has seen decent usage since entering the starting lineup, like getting up more than double digit shots a game on average, which is not easy to do when you share the court with LaVine. So I think overall I like Chicago, and I'm a little worried about their price bump. Now, Washington, we talked about these guys at length. They just remain impossible to get a handle on. There's no way around, except for Beal, and even his minutes haven't been crazy out of the box lately. After, it just doesn't matter who starts. They're getting healthier. Like, Wagner's back now. Bertans comes in and plays 30 minutes off the bench. Troy Brown gets more minutes than some of the starters. I just don't know. I mean, I just feel like I'm a broken record with the Wizards. You have to throw your hand up in the air and just not even know. Like, Roy Hachimura, maybe 30 minutes. I don't know. Like, any thoughts here on Washington? Like, they remain a team that I just don't even want to touch outside of Beal.
Yeah, Beal's the main guy for me. We've seen Troy Brown get quite a lot of DFS ownership, and I suspect he could get some tonight too. People are just, I don't know, just to a fault, in my opinion, bullish on his DFS prospects. And we played him very, very little outside of that time that he was starting. So I would caution against it. I don't think you need to take a risk like that. This is a good matchup going the other way, especially for the Washington bigs. You know, like someone like Davis Bertans playing 30 to 32 minutes. Chicago's been the very worst team in the league against opposing power forwards and centers this year. And that's in spite of not playing a super fast pace. So the fact that they're allowing so many fantasy points to these opposing bigs, you know, leads you to want to at least speculate. But it's not like, outside of Thomas Bryant, the Washington bigs have been all that inspiring. So I'm considering Bertans. Maybe that's a big tournament play. But like you said, I think Beal, obviously the crown jewel here.
Yeah, like Mahimney starts, they play 19 minutes, right? They come in and play Bertans. Like, it's just.
Yeah, Wagner's healthy again.
He's been playing, tricky. He's been getting minutes, but they're off the bench. One of these guys come on, and the Wizards are like the one team where, like, if a guy comes off the bench, then maybe that's just better than him starting. It's like that's crazy. That'd be the one team to say that about. But Thomas Bryant is out this game. He's injured. He's out this game and the next game, but it doesn't even matter. From the minutes, just don't get. You're like, oh, great, Mahimney, but it just doesn't work that way, right? Like, they play matchups and they just can go small. And Chicago has been absolutely brutalized by injuries with the Wendell Carter stuff and Lauri Markkanen. That's kind of made them suffer on the interior. And that being said, I just don't know if Washington has the horses to really totally take advantage based on the minutes.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi: People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
8 o'clock, Portland and New Orleans. This is the game that's going to have a lot of DFS relevance. It's got that easily the highest over-under of the slate. It opened at 240, but it's off the board now. But I think that's just because they're wondering on the status of Zion Williamson. But he's probable. So I think that ends up landing right back in that range. And that's the offshore number is 240. Never mind. They just updated. So yeah, that has the biggest over-under. Pelicans, 3-point home favorites here. Zion is probable to play. Ingram right now is questionable. How much exposure do we want to this game? Because I wrote up basically every Portland guy, okay, that is basically all five Portland starters. Let's put it that way. Lillard, McCollum, Ariza, Anthony, and Hassan Whiteside.
Those are the starters, too.
Yeah, just in case everyone else didn't know. They're suffering injuries of their own. They've been playing very tight rotations. Are we looking at a situation where we might just want to have like four Trailblazers guys? Like the Pelicans matchup so good, and these guys will just play 40 minutes a game. They don't really have, except for Anthony Simons and maybe a little Gary Trent, they don't really have anything coming in off the bench.
No depth.
What are your thoughts on this game?
I think it's a good approach, grabbing as many Trailblazers as possible. This is something I've tried to instill in our chatters over at DFSR.com. You know, we have our members-only chat room, and one of the questions we'll get on short slates oftentimes is, you know, they might say something tonight like, that's a lot of Trailblazers in the lineup tonight. And it's like, yeah, exactly. Because we've already gone through this.
You're welcome. Yeah.
There's a number of teams. Like, we crossed off the first game because of terrible matchups both ways. We don't really want to play many Washington guys. We'll get to a game in a second in San Antonio and OKC that's not going to be rife with a lot of DFS plays. And then Houston-Boston. Boston's a good defensive team. And they're also very deep. So when they're all healthy, it gets pretty tricky. So basically, on short slates, things get narrowed down very, very quickly. And when you see one team in that prime spot, oftentimes the question for us is not, is this too many? But like, it's too bad we can't play even more.
Right.
You know, sometimes we would like to play five or even six guys from the same team. So I love that spot here tonight. New Orleans playing the third fastest pace of any team in the league this season, pairing that with a bottom eight defense. You know, the arrival of Zion isn't changing it that much against the favor of opposing DFS players. If anything, you know, he's capable of playing a fast pace too. So I'm all in on the Trailblazers. I think I'll take any of them. And I guess my question for you would be, who would be that odd man out if you were constructing a lineup? Like, which one doesn't fit in your ideal DFS lineup?
I mean, on a price level, Lillard, what you're getting out of Lillard out of this, like the recent run, is crazy. So I think Lillard is where you start, because if anything, he's priced appropriately, but he's averaged like 37 points a game plus like 38 minutes per game or something, like crazy numbers over the last eight games or something like that. It's been a crazy run. He hasn't taken less than 23 shots twice over the last 11 games. Like, he's just jacking over the Raptors. Now, it has come at the expense of what McCollum's usage has been. So I'm wondering a little bit if our projection on McCollum, as much as like a Dame bump in the short term has been pretty appropriate, McCollum is just not getting as many looks right now. And I just don't know. Sometimes it's a little weird about these short term samples to figure out like what the real story is. So of the five guys, I'm probably at their current price points, I'm probably most worried about McCollum. Because I don't think that there's a situation where Anthony and Ariza kill you, because they're still sort of in that like lower middle tier of pricing guys. Even though, like, you know, Ariza's not going to get crazy usage, so I guess it'd be McCollum, and only because center is pretty thin in this. I think Whiteside is a pretty attractive play. So I guess him, and also I get why McCollum's like showing up in all of our lineups right now, because he's just the recent run. Like, how much do you make of the recent run where he just? Because if he's not scoring, you're really in trouble on his prices.
Yeah, he does nothing.
Right, so I don't know. Like, where do you land? Because I get a little worried seeing the name, and I'm not sure if I'm just too much box score watching on a guy like McCollum. But it's been a lot of box score watching, because it's been this Lillard run. There's clearly been a shift in the Blazers' approach here.
There has. He's also got some pretty good games during that Lillard run, too. And I think it's just kind of one of the things you buy in for when you take a scoring dependent guy like McCollum, you know, to have the separation, 21 points, 4 rebounds, less than 4 assists a game, means that the vast majority of his DFS scoring comes from scoring. And when that's not clicking, the rest can sort of fall apart. So, but yeah, even in this last, you know, 8 games, I see 5 that he's been a very good play on this price point. So you'd figure in one of the best matchups over that course of that run that he would be fine. So I'd be okay playing McCollum tonight.
Yeah, I hear that. And I think at some point you want to just trust that the inputs are correct, and especially, you know, sometimes guys that have dropped in price look weird to play because they dropped in price for a reason, and not doesn't necessarily mean it's always going to be correct long term. So I hear that. What about the Pelican side? Zion is probable to play. He sat out last game. Ingram's questionable. Zion's still 7,200. I'm wondering what you think the real minutes are for him. I think that's where it becomes most important for, really. If it's 33 minutes, then 7,200 in this matchup feels like a great play. If it's 29, right? I get a little bit worried. And I also, just knowing that it's never going to be 38, right? Like with Drew Holiday, you're like, okay, if I set him at 35, I might get 38 minutes out of him, right? 39. And you can say that about a lot of different players. You cannot really say that about Zion Williamson. I do get a little worried about those kinds of situations where I'm never going over. And if I go under, I might be in real trouble. You know what I mean? And I can give you a long list of guys, basically all the Blazers. I'm like, if I set up at 37 minutes, they could play 42, right? That's just kind of how, they're never going to play 33 unless they're getting killed. But I get worried about guys like Zion, who I'm never going to get the top end the minutes upside, which means he needs to really make hay every minute that he's in there.
Yeah, we've seen guys like this in the past. Actually, Whiteside was like this for many years, although he's flexing into a more prominent role with the Trailblazers now. I share your concern, I think. I think, you know, at least some of White or Williamson's price right now is based on forecasting that he will get into a 33 to 35 minute rotation at some point soon. We've seen the Pelicans have understandably been reluctant to do that. We actually haven't seen Zion been, while he's has a lot of flashy plays on his resume so far, it's not like he's been truly explosive on a fantasy points per minute basis either. So the $7,200 price tag seems pretty fair. If there is a case to be made for playing him though tonight, it's just the fact that Portland really is one of the best matchups in the league for opposing fours, right? I mean, this is already a team that's sort of cheating it a little bit, trying to play Melo and Ariza at this stage in their career, trying to pair those guys up against the truly good fours that are around there in the league. That's been a real struggle for them this season. We know Whiteside, while he gets a lot of blocks, can oftentimes be sort of indifferent defensively. That doesn't pair well against a super high energy, double jump guy like Williamson. So I think this is actually a terrific matchup for him. And while I would be thrilled to be off Zion chalk for probably many of the Pelicans games coming up here, I wonder if this is one, especially on a short slate, where we can still find room for him.
Yeah, I think that's probably, and the other thing is on FanDuel, power forward is once again just terrible.
Yeah,
terrible.
That's it.
It's like, what's what you want to play? Favors? Well, Favors had a nice game when he really hasn't done much since Williamson has come around.
No, you can't play.
And so, and then you get Kawhi, and then we're going to get to a couple power forwards here in the San Antonio game, but the position just overall is very weak. All in all, though, this is the game that you want to have exposure to. Keep an eye on the Ingram news. Josh Hart got the start last game for him. Well, that will probably make a difference. Drew Holiday is the last guy. Holiday is interesting because his fantasy points per minute production has not really dropped off since Zion's come around. What have dropped off is the minutes. He has really not played a lot of minutes. He was playing a ton, and I wonder if they just sort of said, we played you so much to start the year, and now that we're getting a little healthier, it's time for us to dial it back a little bit, because his minutes over the last, six, he hasn't played more than 34 minutes in the last seven games. And at some point, and that's not game script issues. That's just kind of what I think, 35, 36 minutes is probably where they want to be with him, because I think they probably felt like they overtaxed him early in the season. So just keep an eye on that. The price has come down a little bit, but I think it's been mostly for good reason. Other 8 o'clock game, San Antonio goes in and plays OKC. The big news here, DeMar DeRozan was a very late scratch in Monday night's game. They're on the Spurs are on the back-to-back. He had back spasms, and it wasn't even announced till basically right at tip-off that he was going to sit the game, and is now doubtful for this game. With the usage bump, with some on-court, off-court stuff, LaMarcus Aldridge is the biggest beneficiary of when DeRozan's off the court. 30% usage rate when DDR doesn't play. Took 25 shots last night in the loss to Denver. I get the sense that San Antonio is still very much in win-now mode, which would make Aldridge, I think, even on the back-to-back, safe on the minutes. Do you see him as, I feel like he's close to a lock play, even though this is a terrible matchup against OKC?
Yeah, this is the really tricky spot here, right? So I don't think the minutes are too much in danger. The last back-to-back, he hasn't played many of them, just because the Spurs haven't been in the position to play very many of them, but he played 32 minutes against Phoenix on January 20th, and that was the last second half. Oh, I'm sorry, he played 30 minutes against the Lakers recently too. But, going up against the Lakers is a whole different animal. I think that his minutes are pretty safe here. I think the usage is probably pretty safe. it really is essentially the worst matchup right. in the league for opposing power forwards, and that would be what would give me pause here. And by the way, hats off to OKC, just another team I want to shout out as saying, like, this is what I love about this season, is this team comes out of nowhere. And I think I heard something, it was on one of Bill Simmons' podcasts, but or maybe it was the Ryan Russell one, nonetheless. They were talking about how OKC had this whole plan laid out for Chris Paul when he got there. Like, yeah, we're going to rest you and we're going to, you know, find time for you to, you know, try to get healthy. And he was like, F that, basically. I'm going to play and we're going to win. And he just like right. went out there and he's like leading this team. He's like nurturing SGA along. Like, I don't know, this year has been a big markup for Chris Paul's legacy in my book. But yeah, OKC, yeah, literally allowing the very fewest fantasy points to opposing power forwards this season. And you hate to see that if you're trying to run Aldridge, who is sort of hit or miss at this point in his career. But he might still get over the finish line, though, because like you said, power forward so bad. Not sure if we want to invest up to Kawhi tonight. And Aldridge still is pretty darn cheap, right? Like we've paid $8,000 for him this season. So $7,100 on FanDuel doesn't look too bad.
I will say, yeah, along those lines with the OKC, though, this is what's going to make the West playoffs awesome, because if they're like the sixth seed or something like that.
Oh, please, please go up against the Rockets.
Or the Rockets or the Clippers or like any of these teams, right? These are going to be good matchups. So you do not want to, you don't want to face the OKC in the first round, even with home field, home court advantage. Like that's.
They're flying around on defense.
They just had their.
Chris Paul's barking at you.
And you're just going to get. Your point guard. Right, you're going to get 40 minutes out of that core of five guys with Schroeder coming off the bench. Like that's a pretty scary proposition. And they can really defend. And so, I don't know. Yeah, this is a, I would not want to be in a situation. And Dallas is the same way. A lot of these teams, the West is going to be awesome. But really, outside of that Memphis team, Lakers all but have probably that first, the top seed locked up. Okay, on the OKC side, they're fully healthy right now. I get why the system is calling out guys like Gallo and guys like Adams. They're not overly exciting plays, and they're not really overly expensive. And so, like, you have no upside on Adams at all. But if he's going to play 30 minutes, it's hard to see him totally destroying you at 5,000 on FanDuel. He was a weird one because I get why the system kind of likes him. He really hasn't been there fantasy production-wise, but the position is so terrible that I think you maybe just end up defaulting to it. Get any thoughts here on the OKC guys?
Yeah, I think it's probably a tragedy of the commons on some level. You know, team's healthy, team is good, has been this way for a while. Guys are priced sort of appropriately. And, you know, like we played Gallo, geez, I think it was like 5,700 against Boston. And that felt like a little bit of a stretch. He ultimately wound up being fine. But given that the prices keep ticking up, it's getting less and less easy to justify sticking them in the lineup. Also, just because, like we talked about earlier, there are just plenty of teams with good matchups today. So
right.
Maybe you sneak in a Gallo. But actually Steven Adams, just is another big problem this season, has been center on FanDuel.
Right.
There's been a lot of nights where there weren't a lot of attractive centers. And while you'd like to play Whiteside, that's a lot of money to spend. And it just might not be a night. Like the difference between Whiteside at 8,800 down to Harrell at 5,600. Like some nights you just can't afford a $9,000 center. So Adams in consideration for me there as well.
The final game on the slate is Boston and Houston. This game has opens at a 231 over-under with Houston slight favorites at -2. One of the more interesting stories of the year where they basically just said, we're going to do our own thing here. We're going to play P.J. Tucker at the five. We're going to bring in another wing. Capella's out the door. It's been kind of working to some degree. And I don't know. It makes it a little weird for me to kind of, because we have to shift some of our metrics on like sort of how this team defends, and they still had defended okay, because they'll basically, if you can't play defense as a center, like you're off the court. Like there's not enough to take advantage of the Rockets this way, right? Like you can't do the thing like, oh, we'll just run everything through our big center and hope that, you know, he can kind of just kind of crush these guys. It doesn't really work like that. Like they kind of force your hand unless you have other level kind of guys on your team. And it makes it a little hard to figure out, like, sort of where to go.
Yeah, so let me take issue with that just from, like, if we're just talking basketball. I don't know if for DFS how this all shakes out. But, like, look at that Phoenix game, right? So the Rockets accomplished sort of their goal, because actually Phoenix was one of these teams with an offensive center in Ayton where you're like, geez, how are they going to defend Ayton? Well, we saw that they didn't need Ayton because they were up by 20 in the first quarter, and they never looked back, and they wound up winning by 36, right? So the Rockets presumably got Phoenix right where they wanted him, right? Got this big center off the court. Ayton plays 23 minutes, and they still got rolled.
Right.
And I don't know. I'm not a big believer in the Rockets experiment so far. It does not scare me at all. And I think actually going up against Boston, this is like not the team they were making this move to deal with, right? Like they're not going to like get underneath Boston with all their rangy wings and, you know, just a lot of switchability there for Boston. I think it's a terrible matchup for Houston. I think Boston should be in a good position here.
Yeah, the flip side of that is none of those games, I think only one of these games they played at full health. That was against Denver. Like either Harden or Westbrook has sat out one of those previous five games. So,
Utah, the very last game they all played and they got beat by Utah. I mean, it was by 1 point, but.
Oh, I'm looking at the wrong game log. Jesus. Okay, never mind. I'm looking at this thing. I'm like, wait a second. How do these losses don't add up? And I'm actually looking at Phoenix's game log instead of Houston.
That would make it tricky.
That was like the old professionalism piece of just looking at the totally wrong thing, and then making a point, and then going to walk it back.
Utah, interestingly, by the way, did leave Gobert out there for 37 minutes, and it didn't. I mean, he's different because he's such a defensive presence down low, and he's not out there for his scoring or whatever. But he gobbled up 15 rebounds and made the Rockets look pretty short.
Yeah, in a 1 point game. So that was the blowout, but they had won the previous ones before. I don't know. So I guess it's wait and see. I'm not sure if it has like. I guess the hard part is figuring out from a DFS relevance piece where it goes. Now the Celtics probably aren't the team that it really matters with because they don't really want to close with a center anyway. So like whatever, they're going to close with like Tatum at the five. Tatum's been awesome over the short term. By the way, this team is pretty fully healthy. The Celtics with Jaylen Brown coming back. It looks like Kemba Walker is still on something of a minutes limit, which I need to just probably honor until we hear word otherwise. He hasn't really played more than 30 minutes since coming back from the injury. Anything to see in this game? This game has a high total. I don't tend to want to play a lot of Rockets when they're healthy. Eric Gordon is out this game, but with Russell and Harden back, I don't think that's probably the place we want to go, considering their prices. What about, let's just talk DFS from this game's perspective.
Sure. So I think starting with Houston, I don't see a path towards playing a lot of Houston guys against a pretty tough Boston defense. I just don't think you need them. I think a lot of these guys are also expensive. Covington, 6,000 now. Like, you're just not going to do that, I don't think, on FanDuel. Boston, I do think, is interesting, especially if Kemba's on a minutes limit. I think that does open up room for guys like Brown, Hayward, and Tatum. If Kemba randomly comes out and plays 36 minutes, that's going to start to create some difficulties. But ultimately, I just don't think you can fade Boston altogether because Houston just does qualify as one of the good matchups on this slate, right? You know, they're basically dead even in the pack in terms of overall defensive efficiency while playing the second fastest pace. So this is not a matchup you can ignore if you don't think your team is going to get blown out. And I don't see why Boston would feel that way.
Yeah. So you get it. Just the weird thing with the Celtics for me from a DFS perspective is where you land guys like Jaylen Brown and Hayward, really all their core guys, when everyone's healthy, right? Because they've spent a lot of minutes this year with one of the four. I'm not going to include Marcus Smart in this group, but one of the four of Tatum, Walker, Jaylen Brown, and Gordon Hayward off the court. And so what happens there is you need to kind of make an adjustment for what their season numbers look like when they're all on the court. And that's the one part where I get a little sketchy about wanting to play them, because you can get a situation where they will just run like the hot hand in terms of scoring at times, right? Like last game, Tatum took 19 shots, Walker took 16. Now Jaylen Brown got up 17 shots, but you really just lose so much along the margins with the other stats too, and a little bit from the minutes. So that's the only part where I get a little concerned about running any of these guys. And I think that Tatum, while he's been very good, it's hard to see him sustain like some of these usage rates when he's just playing with his team. So I think this will be one I'll let the numbers bear it out, and I am going to just make an adjustment, make sure that we're fully adjusted for what the Celtics look like when they're completely healthy. I do think we have enough of a sample size on that to make a good case. Okay, we're going to get out of here. DailyFantasySportsRankings.com is the site. DFSR.com for short. You can sign up for a free trial to our projection service. It's powered by our good friends over at Lineup Lab. Optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings, NBA, NHL, baseball coming right down the pike, which is crazy. Also gives you access to our boy Chris Durrell's content that he's been putting up there. And Chris's Corner, go check that out. And obviously, access to our members-only chat room. We're in there every night before lock, talking basketball, talking whatever slate is coming up there. Trying to just use some, not groupthink, but use everyone's knowledge and try to answer questions. And, yeah. And I think it's a really good experience that I don't think you're going to get a lot of other places. So dfsr.com/deals will get you started. It's a free trial. Try it out for 7 days. Buddy, enjoy your Tuesday night in basketball.
Peace.